know when the click doesn't work and it's like the most embarrassing thing that ever happened? You're gearing up to a nice kind of like clear, crisp snap, and you just get a...
Well, that's how you got sacked from the chorus line of West Side Story.
No, that's not why I got sacked from West Side Story.
Speaking of embarrassing failures, I was coaching basketball last week, and I was walking them through very slowly how to do a layup. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so you drive off of, this is your plant leg, you drive off of this leg, and you jump up, your feet keep moving the whole time, and then just absolutely fucking bricked it on an 8-foot hoop. Not even the full, like, 10-foot actual basketball hoop. It was 8 feet because they're 7 and 8 years old. Mm-hmm. And I just... goes flying off the backboard. It's nowhere close to anything. I'm like, okay, yeah, but not, you want to make it. You want to make the shot. It's supposed to go through the hoop.
Ideally, not the way I did
it. Ideally. You'd like
I'm
to
no
see
basketball
that.
Expert, but my but limited like, experience.
You'd like to see the ball go through the hoop.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah, you could dunk though, without jumping on a hoop that size.
Almost. Yeah. Very close. which is about as high as I can jump these days. I instituted a treat-based performance system for them during their game on Sunday, where I just bought I bought a 3-pound bag of Starburst candy, and I'm like, I'm going to give each of you an assignment, and if you do it during the game, I will immediately give you a piece of candy. Huge performance improvement. Huge.
This is like the CIA distributing crack on the streets in the 80s, you know, you just with a 3-pound bag of Starburst, like, you actually don't know the effect you're going to have on the rest of these children's lives.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think distributing crack in the 80s may have been less damaging than giving children Starburst. But I don't know if you've ever seen a child eat a Starburst, but it's not for the faint of heart, and the aftermath is it's practically Chernobyl out there.
Hello and welcome to Masters of Our Domain. the podcast that was once about Seinfeld and is now about classics, TV shows about the classical world, things of that nature. I'm Milo Edwards, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-hosts, Patrick Wyman and Phoebe Roy. How are we doing?
Yeah, good. Having a great time. Living the dream. Yeah. Loving life.
Just debating the merits of treat-based incentive systems for children.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, it's 6:15 p.m. on a Wednesday. I've been on the goal day. I could use a bit of crack. I reckon that would... That would power me through this recording nicely.
Yeah, just you know, if you freebase some cocaine on a Wednesday on a Wednesday evening, that'll get you through. You don't know where it's going to get you through to, but it will get you through to somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. By the time you come to, you will be, you know, done with what you were previously doing.
Even if that happens to be life itself.
Mm. Yeah.
There's a very famous American football player who played in the late 80s, early 90s, named Lawrence Taylor. One of the most talented people to ever play that sport, but also just was a huge fan of crack.
Oh,
so he would go on crack benders during the week. And then in American football, you play on Sundays, and he would sort of come out of the crack haze at some point on Saturday around the time they were doing the walkthroughs before the game. And then he would go out and just perform at the highest possible level and then immediately go back to smoking crack. Like, as soon as the game was over, his first stop would be crack. And he did that for like the better part of a decade.
You may not like it, but this is what peak performance looks like.
Yeah. I mean, when he's in the Hall of Fame. So really
both for crack and the NFL. One of the only people to be in both.
Yeah, no, there's not a lot of overlap between those two things, though perhaps there should be more if Lawrence Taylor is an example to go by. He's not. He's not an example. Shouldn't emulate Lawrence Taylor.
Yeah, unless you want to be really good at smoking crack, in which case.
Yeah, I like truly, truly world class at smoking crack.
It's actually the 11th crack commandment. it was added. It was an amendment. Yeah,
to the crack constitution, which we hold in very high regard here on Masters of Our Domain.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's the only constitution that we abide by. But we're not here to talk about that. We are here to talk about Chaos, season 1, episode 3. I mean, I keep saying season 1 like, I don't think there's going to be a season two.
There's
no.
They already said they're not going to make another one.
Yeah, and the more episodes I watch, the more that decision is less opaque to me.
the more that sort of started to make sense. All right, so
yeah.
Well, obviously, get into what happens in the episode. But before we do that, I have an observation to make about it. I have a double-headed observation. Imagine a goat. It's got
make
two.
It three, and we can call it a Cerberus observation.
Fine, you can call it.
It's a Janus observation.
At the moment, it's a goat. It's got two horns. All right.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Horn number one. Mm-hmm. That's the goat. Just
it's a good goat.
Okay,
thank you.
Like it. So horn number one is this show does not, and this is actually something that is starting to grind my gears a little bit, which is that this show does not know how dumb or how smart it is. And it doesn't know which it wants to be either, and it also doesn't quite know how much of it is kind of sort of smirking, private joking, like it's sort of not quite, it's, you know, bad form to say that you come right out and say I went to private school, so instead I'm going to put lots of little kind of and like, you know, and
right. Can you do that?
Welcome, just
that noise. Thank you, appreciate it.
This is
Phoebe, do you spend a lot of time hunting turkeys in the eastern woodlands of the United States? Because that was a pretty good turkey call.
Oh, well, this is how I imagine boarding school laughter.
Maybe that's what posh people have been up to all this time. They've just been trying to attract turkeys.
I don't think so. I think they've been roaming the turkey lands, and people think that that's a turkey, but actually it's somebody who went to Winchester.
Yeah, it's actually the turkey. It's actually backwards. The turkeys have been doing the call to attract
boarding
school.
Exactly. Boats,
where they're going to lay a turkey ambush for them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, the last thing you'd want is a load of posh British men being attracted to turkey.
Only to get hair transplants, man.
Oh, yeah.
A kind of reverse Byron situation.
Yeah. Well, it's the Lawrence of Arabia.
Yeah, fine. Fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've been lost about
Byron, though, when you think about it.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to think about the idea of a reverse Byron for weeks. That's going to be stuck
using
somewhere.
Using Byron is gay. Allow me to one-up you.
The Byron that's so gay, he was extremely straight. Yes. So they can't sort of really decide whether they want it to be like, you know, the bit in Shakespeare in Love where the kid who grows up to be John Webster is saying about how he likes the torture bits in the plays, and like you are meant to watch it and be like, no, I know this because John Webster wrote these very, very violent plays. And it's funny, the idea of John Webster being a child watching Shakespeare and being like, I only like the torture bits. Like, that's funny. But you have to be in the know. And if it's a case of you have to be in the know and it's a bit, then that's actually doing quite a good job of recreating what it would have been like to watch a Greek play. Because there would have been so much allusion and so many kind of references, and you would have had to have gone into the theatre with a certain amount of knowledge, a certain amount of kind of backstory. You had to know the lore, otherwise you're going to be sitting there going, what? Seriously, I saw the new Aeschylus the other week. What the fuck is he talking about? What is a woman who turned into a rock sitting on a cliff? What has that got to do with anything? This is so. Like, I'm sorry. He's lost it. He's got too big to edit. That's the problem with Aeschylus.
It's like watching any of those Disney-made Star Wars spin-offs. You're like,
what
is going on?
Who did I just see?
Yeah.
Yeah, as somebody who has watched Iskalis all of the Solo. Disney Star Wars spin-offs, that's an accurate.
How am I supposed to know who Bum Wanko is, and why is everyone acting like they're excited to see him? I don't understand.
Yeah, the Glorp, everybody's here for the Glorp Shido cameo.
Yes. Bum Wanko, the first king of Corinth? Who the fuck is that? What is going on? So
he invented the column.
yes, he did. So if that's the case, then yeah, like it's like quite a kind of interestingly reproductive experience of watching a Greek tragedy, but they kind of lose faith and confidence in there being the kind of the references and allusions, and then fall back into someone like looking at the camera and being like, "I am Ariadne. I am one of the daughters of Minos. Minos is the stepfather of the Minotaur." So they can't really decide sort of which side of the coin they're kind of falling down on. And the second goat horn, and this is going to be, I'm warning you right now, this is going to be the snootiest thing I think I have ever said, thought, ever. And I've said some snooty things. But this is really snooty. This is premium snooty. This is like my piece of feedback is wearing a monocle and a top hat. This is how snooty what I'm about to say is.
Yeah. Load-bearing
snoot. This is load-bearing snoot. So the creator of this show is a person called Charlie Covell, who you'd recognize them from their kind of bit part in various British comedies. They're like briefly like in Peep Show, they're briefly in the In-Betweeners, like et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But now they are a writer, writer and showrunner. And they read English at Oxford. And this whole interpretation of Greek myth is so incredibly an English student who has read the stuff in translation but doesn't know any of the context and thinks that this is the part and parcel. This is like what remains of the Greek mythic tradition, because they don't know what's lost and they don't know about any of the rest of it. So we will obviously get onto this, but the big one is that if you are an English literature student and you have read a Penguin edition of the Iliad, but you have not, but you don't know anything about, say, the Trojan Cycle, you would think that the Trojan War is this big, important, lodestone part of the Greek mythic story. Like it's not really. I mean, for a kickoff, the horse war, which is the one that they fought against the horses.
Yeah.
That one. That's the second Trojan War. There was another one, which is the Argonauts against Priam's dad, and that's like the first bit of the Trojan Cycle is about.
Yeah. Well, that was later called Trojan War One, but at the time it was called
exactly.
The Great Trojan War.
At the time, it was just called the Great Trojan War. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they always celebrated with poppies.
Yeah, but some wonderful poetry.
Well, and the Argonauts from Argos, they were furious about the Trojans stealing all of their little pencils.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, what happened in the interim was that somebody was thrown out of a window, and you wouldn't believe what happened next.
Yeah.
Okay, so that.
So that
you're
was
right.
That was the snootiest joke I've ever made. There's the snootiest observation, snootiest joke. All right.
Here we go. That concludes the snooty section of the podcast.
That includes snooty corner.
I actually don't think that's anywhere close to the snootiest thing you've ever said.
Fucking hell. Bodied out of nowhere by Dr. Wyman there.
I'm sorry. You teed me up for that one. I had to go for it. I had to go for it. You can't just tee me up like that and then not expect me to, you know, take a mild swing at the pinata there.
Yeah. Okay.
Just to mix some sports and party entertainment activity metaphors. Okay. So yeah, I think all of that is essentially correct, and I have no general objection to what you're saying. it's frankly remarkable to me that this was ever greenlit. That so, I am struggling to understand what the thought process of a network agreeing to spend this much money to make this thing, or any sort of production company, like, because it's batshit insane. I don't say that. I don't say that in a negative way. I think if you're going to make like, I actually really like it. I like what they've done with it. I like the kind of fanficky, full of illusions, but kind of grasping the essence without understanding the particulars. I like that. I like the way that it's confident in the world that it's built, I think, in a way that makes it feel inhabited and lived in. I like that about it, but I cannot believe somebody looked at this and said yes. And that like, and I, and it, it's, and to your point, Marla, what you were saying earlier, the reasons for not making a second season of it are absolutely crystal fucking clear. They could not possibly be clearer why they are not making a second season of this. Yeah. But it makes me sad that we got this absolutely insane thing, which I'm sure is only going to get more insane over the next five episodes.
Presumably.
Like, it's crazy to start with. The premise is insane. But they made it. And I think kind of because of or in spite of all of that stuff, I'm not sure which, it kind of works for me. I'm kind of into it. I want to see where it goes. It's the it really commits to its presentation of this world, the idea of otherness and familiarity. Like, there's two things. I think there are two like real huge themes here. One is what it's like to inhabit a world in which people's expectations and ideas about how things are supposed to work are fundamentally different from our own, which I think is something we talk about a ton when we're discussing shows that are set in historical periods, movies that are set in historical periods. Like, it has the confidence of it fully inhabiting its weird, different alien universe. That's number one. And number two, it's about authority. And are you supposed to do what you're told? Do you have free will? Can you make choices? To what extent are you simply a prisoner of forces larger than yourself? Or and in those ways, I think it's getting at and doing really interesting things.
Yeah.
But and that's not really separable from how batshit it is. Like, it's all part of the same batshit package. Like, I don't know if there's a way to make this that makes it either less snooty, more rooted in kind of I don't know if there's another way to do this that isn't like this. Like, it is exactly what it's trying to be, and that thing is weird and interesting and hard to follow, and it's wild that it was ever made.
It's really hard to follow, man. Why does Theseus work for Minos? When did this come in?
I don't know, man. I don't know.
A bit smug as well. It is a bit smug.
Yeah. Oh, it's extremely smug. It loves how smart it is.
Yeah. When it turned out that Minos was Irish, I thought they were going to do the Irish built the labyrinth bit, or a sort of Alexander style. Like, yes, the Minoans were Irish, and then the Athenians, they're like Scottish.
The Irish haven't built anything that big since Newgrange, man. Like, that, it's been 5,000 years. They're not building. You think they're building a labyrinth? No, not by choice. Those prisons, all built at the behest of the English, man. Like, they're not doing that themselves.
It's the sort of thing a kind of lunatic, like, British colonial, governor would do. Like, we're going to build a big labyrinth prison.
Yeah, the third pier of Drogheda was like, yeah, no, we need a, that's what we need. Drogheda?
It's funny as the whole concept of a cowboy, when really that sounds like a boy who is also a cow. Just thinking about the Minotaur. Is the Minotaur like the first cowboy?
Yeah.
Did he melt his victims? Is that what we're given to understand when they're hanging there all kind of weird all from the monument?
Kind of awful. Like, I don't know.
What is that? Yeah, you would think that the Minotaur would be more of a mauling type guy.
Yeah.
Well, not like melting like candle wax.
Well, they sort of suggest that he can breathe fire. Because what they don't show, they don't show you the other labyrinth, which has got somebody with like who's like got the body of a cow but the head of a man, who's a lot less frightening.
Yeah.
He's just like moo.
He's a lot less scary. I mean, the big thing about him is that he's got four stomachs, so that's really you don't want him to throw up on you.
No,
because pretty endless supply. Yeah,
he can digest coarse fiber. That's really his main deal.
Yeah, that's really his. Yeah. That's really his power.
He's really into mastication.
You know,
as an activity and a lifestyle.
Oh, you know what I would like? Yeah, he's a big ruminator. He's a ruminating guy.
Yeah. Not in a thoughtful way. In the very literal sense.
In very literal.
No, he just is a ruminant.
Yeah. He loves to ruminate.
Yeah. He's like, oh boy, you got any cud? I love cud. Yeah.
Who doesn't love a good cud?
You know what he does is like all week he's chewing the cud, and then on Sunday he just like he gets straight and he's out there. He's out there on the pitch. Pitch? What do you call the thing that they play American football on?
Field.
Field.
Field. Field. That makes more sense.
For Lawrence Taylor, it was crack. For that guy, it's a cud.
Yeah, exactly. Nice cud. Yeah.
Real nice. That'd be great. Cud. This boy's playing for Indiana State. He's got the head of a man, the body of a cow. He's over 700 pounds. And this boy can eat the grass right off the field. We've never seen anything like it.
You say that like that's not the absolute dream of every American football coach.
Yeah.
A cow-sized body of a cow?
That cannot be correct.
Yes. An immovable 700-pound object on a football field. That is like, there's a reason why they've been going to Samoa to try to recruit gigantic rugby players for the last 15, 20 years. Like that, like
it's a if you great told me source that, of large blokes, Samoa.
We love our large Polynesian lads. Mm. But yeah, no. If you tell me you could just go out into a pasture and find a large thing to put on a football field, they're going to be lining up for that. That's American football.
Now that boy is on the team. And if he needs milking, you're going to do it.
Yeah. If the cow can move laterally, that's a bonus, but not required.
Just don't get him. Just don't lead him upstairs.
Yeah.
That's the main thing.
And like, what's he do if it's raining? Mm. He's just lying down in the middle of the.
Well, he's still kind of an obstacle, I guess.
Yeah, that's you say that like it's a bad thing.
I don't know a lot about American football. I'm pretty sure you're not allowed to just like lie on the field.
You absolutely are. Yeah, should you? Probably not. Can you? Absolutely.
Really?
Usually after a concussion.
Oh, okay.
God, imagine giving a cow a concussion. That would really be.
Oh, it'd be really
okay. So really I. Off. You want to hear a really fucked up story from what I was doing concrete?
All right, let's do it.
Okay. So this I will bring this back to a cow getting a concussion. If you'll give me a moment here. So we were working on a giant commercial dairy. There were probably 40 or 50,000 cows at this dairy. It was 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The smell of cow and cow byproducts was just hanging in the air. It was the worst smell I've ever experienced in my life. We're out there for hours. We're pouring these really long strips of concrete, like mile long strips of concrete. And at one point, a bunch of the cows got let out for whatever reason, like somebody wasn't paying attention, and they were about to go to run across the mile long strip of concrete that we had just poured. I was working with a guy who the foreman on the site was a guy named Ray, and Ray runs over to the cows. He starts screaming, "No, fuck no, you get away from my pour, you motherfucker!" Just screaming at the top of his lungs. And there's one lead cow kind of trotting placidly and the others are following, and he goes and he punched the cow in the head.
Oh my God.
He walked up to the cow and punched it in the head, and the cow kind of goes, it shakes its head and then turns around and trots back the other direction, and the other cows followed it. And I didn't know what to say. I like, what do you say when you see a grown man punch a cow? It's just this moment that has sat in my head for the last 20 years, and I don't know what to do with
it.
And I don't know how to interpret it.
What you do.
Yeah, you get. I mean, you salute that man, and you say, you say you're not going to have to re-pour that stretch. Yeah. I'll tell you that much.
Exactly, man versus nature. You know.
Yeah, yeah. Ray won. I'm sure that guy is dead now. No way that guy is still alive.
Yeah, eventually the cows will come for you.
Well, like the also mafia. He didn't. I mean, that guy did not look good.
That's what the expression "till the cows come home" means.
Exactly. When
they come for Ray. The cows are coming home in order to punch Ray in the head.
Yeah. How funny would it be if that really were the way that guy died? Because again, I say this, there's
the
no way he's alive. Yeah. Like all of these guys were smoking 2 packs a day, chewing tobacco when they couldn't smoke, drinking 12 beers a night after they got off work. I cannot imagine that many of the 45-year-olds I did that job with are still alive at 65 now.
Yeah, not only doing that, but they were also going around starting fights that they couldn't possibly finish with cows.
Mm. The cow didn't want the smoke, Phoebe.
Mm. Yeah.
But now that the cow has had a chance to plot revenge with 40,000 of his friends on that dairy.
Yeah. They're mooing in agreement as we speak.
Have you never heard the expression "revenge the dish best served cow"? No.
I have not.
Best served, regurgitated and chewed several times and then processed through a series of 4 stomachs.
Best served cud is the expression.
Yeah. Dial M for moo. So this episode, it's one of those episodes where they introduce a whole load of new plot that has not come up really so far,
and also like they've suddenly just decided that like that it's completely fine that everyone, that no one is even trying to do an accent.
Yep.
Everyone just has whatever accent they have, fine, like that's fine, that's like that, that's not an issue. But we do have someone who is working in the most American seeming gas station ever, who is sort of supposed to be British, like right at the start of the cold open when we get introduced to the Furies.
Yeah, and a guy pulls up in a Ford Sierra with a British number plate.
Yeah.
Yeah. To a gas station in like Death Valley. I'm so confused by the aesthetics of this.
I'm confused semiotically. So we get introduced to the Furies.
Tyson, Tommy, whatever the dad's called.
Is it Peter Fury? Is that
maybe?
Cool.
Sounds right.
Now listen, you've defied the law of the gods. You got no fucking chance, son. You're gonna come up against me. This is knocked out cold, Sparkle.
If we keep talking about the Furies, like this really does keep coming back to cocaine. We started today by talking about smoking crack, and now here we are, right back at cocaine.
We started today by talking about smoking crack, lines you would only hear on this podcast, and possibly like the official crack smoking podcast. There's got to be one where I presume they do begin most episodes.
In that manner.
Well, maybe they don't. Maybe that's vegetables to them. Maybe they start with like fun off-topic bits about, you know, like classical TV shows they've been watching, perhaps while smoking crack.
Yeah, and only then do they get to the crack.
Yeah.
Surely on the crack podcast that the crack is table stakes. You don't need to mention the crack. We don't mention our mics.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So you think they're just on crack. They don't talk about it.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. I was assuming a podcast that's like, you know, about, it's like for the, by and for the crack community, you know, it's like.
Oh, yeah, no. Okay. No, you know what, man, I see where the confusion's arisen. That's the YouTube channel.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I suppose the real question is, are you a crackhead or are you somebody who just uses crack?
Yeah.
And if you're just somebody who uses crack, then that crack podcast is not for you.
Are you a gourmet or are you a gourmand? That's what I want to know. That's what I want to know from you.
Yeah.
What did you get in your crack sommelier exams? That's what I want to know. Like, are you a natural or are you somebody who just, you know, really just memorized the guidebook?
Yeah. Can you tell how hard that package was stepped on?
Can you tell me which village this crack comes from?
Yeah.
Because if you can't.
Yeah, I want a stable isotope analysis of the crack. I want to know how much baking soda was used. Yeah.
I want to see you in action at a crack tasting flight.
Crack tasting flight.
Oh yeah, my god.
Yeah, very good. The Furies.
So we have the Furies. I didn't know that's what Tyson Fury sounded like, but it sounds about right.
He's quite easy to do. He's got a weird voice.
I think the dad is called Michael Fury. That sounds right. Who's Billy Fury?
I'm going to be honest. It doesn't really matter. They're all tight. None of these people are so much individuals as they are a type of guy.
Mm.
And their names are kind of interchangeable. You know who they are. You know what they're about. Like, it doesn't actually matter how you designate them. Like, it's. I think Tyson Fury is the only one whose name you actually need to know. All of the others, you can just be like a Fury, generic Fury.
I know who Tommy Fury is because he was on Love Island.
Was he really?
Yeah.
I think I knew that.
I was about to say only Britain's Charles and Diana, but they were British as well, weren't they?
It's John Fury is the dad.
Oh, yeah,
John
that's the
Fury.
One.
Tommy Fury and Molly May just split up or got back together or something. I don't know.
One of the two.
Fill
in the blanks as appropriate. That's at the time of recording, of course.
Fill in the blanks. To be honest,
it's
Schrodinger's relationship.
Yeah, exactly. So we have the Furies. You can only see them if they're after you. Now, this is one of the bits that sort of pissed me off a little bit.
You don't want that, especially not in the ring.
No. But I mean, they're all quite large. The Furies, like, it's quite difficult to not. To
yeah,
not
they
see.
Are. They're you know big what,
can
tennis.
We?
They're not svelte.
Can we drop the running thing about the Fury family being the Furies? Can we drop that? Because I'm finding it confusing.
I like that's your objection to it. It's not that this isn't a viable well from which we can draw here. It's confusing. We haven't scraped the bottom of this particular barrel.
Don't confuse me. The gods have nominated me to punch you in the fucking face. And no logical obstacles or bamboozlement will prevent me from that objective, son.
I don't think that's what he sounds like.
You're in big trouble. I'm going to smite you. You're going to be smoked.
That can't be what he sounds like.
It's when he does his, like, fighting talk. He talks in that weird kind of, like, it's like almost rhythmic.
Yeah, it's very a caricature of a caricature of Muhammad Ali doing press conferences in the 70s, but filtered through a traveler.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
He's not inaccurate. Like, yeah. he's not wrong. Like, this.
I think he should have, like, leaned into the Gypsy King thing and done more, like, kind of Spanish guitar stuff. I think that would have been fun as a way to...
Yeah, some flamenco.
You would find that intimidating if, like, you're doing the stare down and the other guy's just singing, like, Bambaleo or whatever. You'd be like, fuck, this guy's on another level.
Where do you even keep that guitar? He's just wearing shorts.
I've got a capacious gooch. There's a cavity.
God, it's just
if you believe it's there. I spent a lot of time with drag queens.
Just tape it down. You just got to tape it down. That's the whole deal.
Okay. Yeah. It's a two-thirds size guitar, like a kid's one.
Like a little, like, one of those, like,
so
cute,
the Furies
little,
are pursuing the guy
pursuing the guy in the bathroom. Okay, so that guy, they call him Terry because they're British, but he's Terrius, and this bit pissed me off, right?
I'll tell.
This bit pissed me off because King Terrius has already been punished. His punishment has taken place, and he has since turned into what's Terrius turned into?
A Yorkshire Terrius.
A Yorkshire Terrius. That's right.
Yeah.
Terrius.
I don't know about King Terrius.
A hoopoe. Is that a hoopoe? Yeah.
What's a hoopoe?
It's a kind of bird. You should look it up. They're fucking sick.
they come just below the hypo.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, you know, very important to know the distinction because otherwise you could really fuck with your blood sugar. Yes. Terrius, that's that fucking horrible story where he sees his wife's sister and is overcome with passion and he rapes her and cuts her tongue out. And then the wife finds out. And so she kills their son and bakes him in a pie and then feeds the pie to the husband.
Oh.
And it's, yeah, it's fucking, it's grim. It's a grim story.
Christ.
It's Procne and Philomela. And then Philomela turns into a nightingale and Procne turns into a, I can't remember, but Teres, I'm pretty sure, turns into a hooper. So he's, it's happened. His, and this is what I mean about like, about it's very kind of like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But then when there are kind of sort of more important characters, like someone shows up being like, this is Andromache. She was one of the princesses of Troy. She watched her husband die. She watched her son get thrown from the rooftops, et cetera, and so on. So it's a bit kind of having Tereus as a character, it's a bit wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But also bit wink wink nudge nudge to no purpose, because Tereus has already received his punishment. Tereus does not get pursued by the Furies. In fact, I'm pretty sure the Furies don't show up at any point in the Metamorphoses, which is where most of these stories are coming from. I'm pretty sure of that. But also, I'm also pretty sure that the Furies don't pursue women.
Oh, really? They're feminists.
They are.
They're like, look, this is reparations. We're only pursuing men. Yeah. Am I right? Am I right, guys?
Very intersectional. Yeah. Very intersectional.
I'm not 1,000%. I'm not 1,000% on it, but I'm almost positive that there was another punishment mechanism for misbehaving women. I think Furies. They're a single issue beasticle.
Single issue beasticle, the short snippets that Mr. Beast is doing now. Dude, there's a new single issue beasticle. Yeah, that's it. That's who women are pursued by, Mr. Beast.
There is a point in every episode that we do where you break me, and that a single issue beasticle was my point for today. You got me. That was the one. Well played.
It also feels kind of like it would be like a meat lollipop, you know? like an ice lolly, but that's made of Bovril or something.
Okay. How is that a thing that exists?
Oh, I don't think it is, but that's just what...
No, but what... I thought a meat popsicle was like a joke. I didn't know that was a real thing.
No,
that you
it's
could
not
do.
A real thing.
No, like, I just... That's like Rorschach test. That's what it made me think of.
Whenever there's a heat wave, there are always quite a lot of pictures of like big cats in zoos being given like blood ice lollies.
Oh, yeah.
That's always nice, seeing a tiger.
It's coming to pussy at the same time. Like, I'm having an ice lolly and I'm a cat, but also it's blood.
Oh, Jesus God.
Yeah. Nosferamu. How about that?
Nosferamu. No.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Nosferatu.
Yes. Are you...
Nosferatu.
No, stop with that Australian shit. No, absolutely not. Yeah. The rising cultural hegemony of Australia needs to be investigated immediately.
Washed.
Very. Yeah.
Give him no quarter.
Yeah. Let's put a stake in this.
Put a stop to it. Okay. Yeah. So we've got the Furies who are pursuing Ariadne, who is Minos's daughter, and. Another thing that wound me up, like I said, if you're gonna do the bits, then you sort of can't really have so much exposition. The other thing is the reason that the Furies are after Ariadne is that she accidentally killed her twin brother when they were babies by rolling over on top of him in their sleep. Ariadne did have a brother, mythically called Glaucus, but the story of what happened to Glaucus is much fucking weirder. It's that he fell
in a pie, did he?
He fell in a jar of honey.
Oh.
And drowned in the jar of honey. And
hence the expression honey trap.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
It's what
the KGB lured him in there.
It's what the 1999...
They got him and Winnie the Pooh.
Winnie the Pooh is very valuable to capitalist system. We have to destroy his reputation by luring him into compromising position using sex workers. US hegemony will never recover from this blow to their credibility.
Oh, Piglet. I say this as someone who grew up and loved Winnie the Pooh and whose children have watched a lot of Winnie the Pooh. I feel like I'm entitled to make one Winnie the Pooh sex joke. Mm. Just one. Just one.
Well, you know, there's a Winnie the Pooh horror film.
There is Blood and Honey. Yeah. Because he's in the public domain now.
Yeah. Mm. And that's the first thing they did.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So you could do a Winnie the Pooh porn parody called Winnie the Piss. Like, it would be, you could legally do that, but...
You could, yes.
Milo, you don't give away ideas like that for free, man.
TM. We're making that.
cut that from the recording.
Yeah. Yep. Okay, right, yeah. So... Yeah. Yeah, we get to, yeah, so
Phoebe, you look like you're fucking struggling over here.
I'm just trying to keep track. Just trying to keep track of what happened in this episode, and I keep getting baffled by talk of Fury Brothers and so on. Yeah. So that's why the Furies are after Ariadne, even though it wasn't her fault. And so Ariadne's one of the people who's going to be instrumental in Zeus's downfall, right?
So they keep telling us.
So they keep telling us. It feels a little bit like they've been telling us that the plot is going to start anytime. Feels a little bit like that.
Seriously, guys, any minute.
Any minute now. That's just another thing that's sort of like irritating me about it is that something that I think would be quite fun to do if you were going to do a. It's the, it's like modern times, but we have, modern. I don't mean modern times. You know what I mean? Like, it's like now-ish, but we have Greek gods and we have Greek heroes. Blah, blah, blah. I would quite like it if somebody tried to kind of put together a sort of like, almost like a timeline and tried to kind of keep it kind of non-anachronistic. Because, so we've got Theseus, who's the bodyguard, because he's one of, Theseus is one of the Argonauts, right? And Theseus' own personal timeline doesn't really make much sense because it's kind of, there are two different kind of story cycles that are associated with Theseus, and they feed into each other, and they're sort of like stuck together back to front.
Mm. And gradually you can replace all of the different elements of those stories.
It's sort of yes, exactly, exactly. With the sugar babes, oddly.
Yeah, yeah. Strangely, when Theseus met Mutia Buena, one of the spin-offs.
Yeah, only one could live. Mm. Yeah, so it does sort of make sense that Theseus works for Minos, sort of, even though Theseus is supposed to have killed the Minotaur, who's still around. And we have this thing where the Trojans are accused of defacing the monument to Zeus. And there's this kind of... I'm not entirely sure what this is meant to be an analogy for, but there's something smirky about it. So I'm calling it for what it is. This bit is another smug bit. The bit about the Trojans being sort of some manner of kind of marginalized person after the Trojan War, even though the Trojan War is meant to have been sort of after the voyage of the Argonauts.
And they cut to Trojan Town, and then it's immediately a black guy being like beaten up by the police. And then later on in the episode, you meet all of the Trojans, and they're all white. And I'm just like, wait.
Yeah. So there is that, and I think part of that is. Like that was a kind of necessary bit of narrative backforming, given what happens to the ringleaders of the Trojans. I think they probably thought that would be like maybe a bit much visually.
Because this is my bugbear with the portrayal of the Trojans that doesn't make sense. Is that they're like, yeah, the Trojans are like, they've desecrated our gods. Those fucking
gods
are important to us.
They've got the same
gods.
It's the same gods. Yeah, that's
one
of my notes.
They're the same gods.
They're the same gods.
Okay, but here's why this is not easy to follow. Mm. And I had to go back and listen to this like three times to get it to make sense. The reason why they're mad at the gods is because the gods destroyed Troy. And the gods destroyed Troy for its hubris, because it was supposed to have been the most powerful city, and they were the greatest people. And so it was the gods' punishment that led to the destruction of Troy. And that's why the Trojans have beef with the gods. And that's the idea.
Could have been worse. Whether could have baked them all in a pie.
Could have baked them all in a pie. We've seen lots of worse things than being thrown from the walls of the city. As a child, we've seen much worse than that. That's pretty mild. You should be thanking Zeus, not angry at him.
It's called restorative justice.
Yeah. So, I mean, whether any of that came through clearly or was actually understandable at all, that is, I think, what they're trying to get across.
I think they are as well. But like I said, it doesn't. I don't think it quite works, to be honest with you. I think that it's just a little bit confusing. Again, much like the Fury's brother bit.
I mean, if I'm going to give them credit for things that I think they've done well, or things that I think are interesting about it, that this plot wise, this show, I'm struggling to make sense of it. And that is not just because I'm high when I watch it.
No, that is not to be 100% clear, that's not why. But like, also, like, there's a whole thing about Astyanax, didn't die after all. He survived. And you're a bit like, oh, shit, like, okay, fine, that's something, a kind of counterfactual.
He's fucking dead now, we know that.
like a counterfactual where Astyanax lives, like, I can vibe with that. And then, but then you barely get a chance to really develop any kind of interest in the character before he is really horribly executed. So, like, if what they're trying to say with this stuff is, the gods are cruel and capricious, and they do fucked up things to people all the time because they don't care. I think personally that's been established quite clearly. And I got to tell you, I do think that these moments of grimness, while I understand that they are like meant to conjure the atmosphere in a kind of legitimate way of like being exposed to Greek myth through Greek tragedy, fine, but like, I think it stops the show from being fun.
Yeah.
Or like it interrupts the potential for fun that, like, every so often you're like, oh, that's horrible.
But when I say that it's a fucking weird show that's fully committed to itself, I think that kind of walking an unsettling line between fun and grim, I think, is exactly what it's trying to do. And it's meant, I think, like Greek tragedy, I think it's meant to be discordant, right? Like, it's meant to show us one kind of emotional register and then immediately throw us off that. I think that's intentional. Whether it works or not, I think, is almost kind of beside the point. Like, I think they are doing what they're trying to do. Whether that works for us, whether it's an effective storytelling technique, I do think that's kind of the vibe they're going for, and they have more or less succeeded in recreating it. I think it's doing exactly what it wants to do. I think the reaction that we're having to this, I think, is the reaction that we're more or less supposed to have.
Yeah, but like, I think, like, in terms of like establishing establishing the gods as cruel and capricious. Mm-hmm. I think they've done that. We don't need necessarily to watch Poseidon drowning one of his attendants, apparently, for fun.
Yeah, that is quite a random bit, because it's like it's presented as though he's responding to the fact that Zeus has asked him to punish the humans. But he just goes to one of his own. Like, Zeus very much meant the people who desecrated the thing, not like one of the women who works on your boat.
Yeah.
It was fucking hilarious when he stuck his tongue in the king's mouth, though. Or when he stuck his toe in the king's mouth. That was unsettling and strange and very, I thought, pretty funny.
Yeah, sort of thing. Poseidon was a real freak, you know? Likely. That's what they don't tell you about Poseidon.
Likely thing for him to be doing.
Big-time foot guy.
Hmm. Yeah, loved shrimping. That was Poseidon's thing. That's why it's a maritime tradition, shrimping, hence the name.
Phoebe, I think all of your concerns and objections are completely rooted in the material. Like I think you're completely right about all of it. I just think, like, for whatever reason, like it works for me. I don't know why. And I wouldn't go so far as to say that it's good, but it is itself. It is exactly, I think, what it's trying to do. And all of the weird discordant notes and kind of the thematic up and downs. Like, one of the things about when you read Greek drama, it seems to me, or at least one of my takeaways from it, and it's now been quite a while, is how jarring it is. Like, how many jarring things happen and how it kind of jumps from one register to another, or one kind of emotional mode to another. Again, I'm not an expert in Greek drama, but that was my impression of it.
Hey, you should talk to my mother-in-law.
Is that your Byron?
Yeah. Byron's like, they told me I could do the voice.
It's Byron after a hair transplant.
Yeah.
Byron invented the mother-in-law joke. People don't realize this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why. It kind of works for me. I like it. I'm not sure it's good, but I like it.
It's a strange beast, this. Much like the half man, half cow that Irish King Minos uses to punish his various detractors. He's pursuing.
Also, like, why does the Trojan War even exist in this universe, considering that, like, all the, like, gods, heroes, and other kind of Greek tragic figures are still not Greek, or Greek mythic figures are just sort of like cutting about, like, either come up with a timeline or don't. But if you don't come up with a timeline, you can't go around putting the important, you can't go around sticking the important battles in it.
Yeah, I think that's it for me. It's too vague. And yet there are certain things that are so specific. Like, oh, well, we've got all these Trojan refugees from the Trojan War that happened, presumably recently. But then everything else is like, oh, you know, yeah, that stuff. You know, that's kind of in the ether somewhere.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, and then...
There is a bit where it says, why can't we let people vote? That's what the Athenians do. And I've just put, that's annoying.
Yeah. Yeah. King Minos, famously a big fan of the Athenians. Yeah. He liked for them to vote, in fact, every 9 years as to which young virgins they would like to send to be fed to his half-man, half-cow.
Yeah.
And that was the worst bit, is he'd chew them several times. And
yeah, I know.
It was really, really...
In fact, that's why that horrifying execution scene is so horrible, because it's the four stomach situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think calling the Minotaur his half-man, half-cow is very funny. I think that's a funny thing to call the Minotaur. Yeah, it's... Like, again... You gotta decide whether you're rooting this in a kind of syncretic everything from myth is all happening at the same time, and therefore there can't really be any, like, significant events from that mythic timeline because all the people are around at the same time. Everything is contemporary. Therefore, there can't be a timeline. Therefore, there can't be this specific event. Or you've got to take the line that it's just like, it's like total like magic realism. It's happening just because I say so. So we've got bits from myth and we've got bits from history and we've got bits from politics, which is why for some reason we have the ancient King Minos of Crete living alongside the extremely short period of time that there was such a thing that computers would be called Athenian democracy. It's not very long. It's such a blip in this historical period.
Yeah.
It's a blip and an aberration. I don't know why they've put in a blip and an aberration.
Yeah. Yeah. There is, I mean,
unless
to be
it's
fair,
to go, oh, ho, 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 I went to private school.
Yeah. If presented differently, a lot of this stuff would have quite a sort of Marquez sensibility, you know, like, my mother who had sex with a bull and gave birth to a half man, half cow. He was my brother. And he lived in a maze. Yeah.
Maybe that's what I dig about it, is it is like 100 years of solitude has smoked crack with a copy of Ovid's Metamorphoses.
Sure.
That's
100 years of crack.
But isn't that kind of the vibe? Am I crazy for thinking that? Like that's kind of what it feels like to me.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
That. Somebody took Greek myth 101. Whilst also reading 100 Years of Solitude and possibly taking some, maybe not crack, maybe some mild ayahuasca, like ayahuasca plus those two ingredients, I think would get you there.
Yeah, yeah. I also, so with this show, another thing I noticed is that like you keep thinking there's going to be a twist and then there just isn't. Like when they were going, like they were sort of like fully, it seemed like they were just assuming that the Trojans had done this desecration of the monument. And then they're calling him like the Trojan Seven, which I feel like as soon as you say there's something and then number, it implies they are falsely accused, right? It's very much like a, you know, this is a classic, you know, you assume the Trojans did it. They've already set up this thing that like Trojans are like this oppressed ethnic group or whatever. And then it's like, no, the Trojans did do it. Yeah.
Yeah, they totally did it. Like,
yeah, and like then they all get executed. And you're like, what am I supposed to think?
And then you're like, but if they've all been executed, then why have we spent the last 20 minutes setting up these characters? Particularly one of the characters being somebody who, as far as you know, up until this point was dead. This is like, I'm sorry to have to bring up the Princes in the Tower again. I am.
No, you're not.
Sorry.
You're not sorry at all, Phoebe.
I'm not sorry. I'm not even slightly sorry.
I'm not even slightly sorry.
But this is pure Perk and Warbeck stuff. This is like kind of, oh, it's one of the princes. He survived. I mean, we have executed him now, obviously. but for those couple of years, he, I hope you didn't get too invested in this character. And like, why is he having an affair with Theseus? What the fuck's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was very tender, though.
It was tender. It's a bit like, why have they put that in there to encourage you to kind of buy into this romantic storyline and then kill him in the next scene?
They've spent so much time setting up this thing of Ariadne going like, yeah, Theseus is in love with me. I kind of love Theseus, but it's like, it mustn't happen. They go on this like date to a fucking gladiator show. Like, are we in Greece or not? What's going on? But it's like cyberpunk gladiators as well. And then we get this whole storyline with the Styrnax, and then when he gets briefly released, it just cuts to hard gay sex between him and Theseus, having not set up the idea that they're gay or that they're in a relationship with each other at all. It's just like,
they even know each other.
Yeah. It's just like, oh, I've convinced my father to release him, and then just woof, straight in. There he is, getting his cheeks clapped.
Okay, it was a little bit jarring to get to the cheek clapping. Yes, I will admit that. But no, they talk about their relationship because Theseus has arranged this whole outing to get Ariadne to meet him so that Theseus can get his boyfriend pardoned. That's the whole purpose of the outing.
Yeah.
Okay, well, again, so this is what I mean about the show being a little bit tricky to follow because I did not get that.
how am I the one who's following this? I'm zooted to the nines when I'm watching this
show.
The
Benjamin is actually giving you a kind of weed hyperfocus, which is enabling you.
It is a sativa, Milo.
Milo and I were doing some research for Crackcast while we were watching it. So we were both having just like real trouble focusing because we were a bit like, you know what? I kind of feel like going and running around in like a square.
Yeah, it's a demanding show to prepare for.
Yeah. Energetically, emotionally, spiritually. The big three.
You guys are not wrong at all. I can't emphasize this enough. However much it seems like I'm disagreeing with you, I'm not actually disagreeing with you about A, this is hard to follow. B, it's bad shit. Yes, it's too smug and smart for its own good, often at the expense of being able to follow the plot line. Yes, all of this is true. I don't have any objections to any of that. I'm just saying I like it. It's kind of doing
Gladiator 2 again. We've given you the world's worst hill to die on, and I I don't wish it on you.
Look, but you know, that's why I'm here, man. I'm just tilting at windmills. I'm dying on hills. That's why I'm present. Yeah. It's my life.
Yeah. But yeah, I think routinely with this show, I'm like, why bother retelling the myths if none of the plot points of the myths matter to you at all? If Theseus and Ariadne aren't in love with each other, but in fact Theseus is having a gay relationship with Astyanax from the Iliad and the Aeneid, like a completely different guy who's not involved in the myth of Theseus at all.
This is fucking bi erasure, Milo. Bi erasure. Are you saying he can't also fuck Ariadne?
Which case he should be fucking both of them. We should see the Ariadne Astyanax threesome. A lot of syllables in that threesome.
A lot of syllables.
Also, because remember the actual story, and this is again what I expected to see. Because like when they were talking about the Trojan Seven, I was like, "Oh, they're going to do like the Seven against Thebes." No, they're not. As it turns out, no. Nope, that is not what they were going to do. Like another bit where it's just completely just like it's going to be a twist. And the story of what happens with Theseus and Ariadne is that he kills the Minotaur. She helps him. She helps him kill the Minotaur.
Mm.
Off they sail together, and then he abandons her on an island, and she wakes up and she sees him sailing along on the way, sailing off with the sugar babes on his ship of sugar babes, ship of Keisha.
Yeah.
And
then Ariadne yells at the sky, "What am I, Siobhan?" And then Dionysus comes and picks her up.
So,
and he makes her a star, unlike Siobhan.
Oh, that's sad. No, she's all right. I'll tell you what. All three original sugar babes are aging like fine wines. They all look spectacular still.
There you go.
Absolutely fair fucking play.
Yeah.
What's the milves situation here?
The sugar milves.
Yeah. They've got to like be. Yeah, they're in prime milf age now, I would say.
Well, it's like a kind of medieval, it's a sort of medieval milling technique, the sugar milf. You can see them above, like, you know, about, you know, when you go to like kind of like old market towns, and there's a kind of sugar milf above the
Well, what is society but a gigantic mill for grinding young women into milfs?
Oh, that's beautiful. True ally, Dr. Wyman.
Yeah, we call that mill patriarchy.
This is actually Siobhan's looking great. So
yeah,
fair play to Siobhan.
Also, yeah, because I went to see the Sugar Babes last year. They did a press gig on like Tower Bridge next to Tower Bridge.
Was a sort of weird finger to Fergie.
Get it right, Fergie. Somebody who George worked with had a had a ticket for it. So we were in this like weird kind of like in, like press enclosure, and I found myself in the extremely spiritually ruinous position of having to explain who the Sugar Babes were to a fucking 22-year-old. And I was
why
like,
was
yeah,
the
22-year-old
at the Sugar Babes launch event?
She was also there in a kind of like, oh yeah, yeah, that sounds like a fun thing to do. I'll go see this band I've never heard of. And I was like, yeah, yeah, you know, and I was sort of, you know, kind of sang a couple of Sugar Babes songs. And she was like, I don't know. And I was like, yeah, like round, you know, you must know round. And I did some maths and I was like, fuck me, you were born in the year that round came out. I'm going to throw myself in the river.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nope.
That's a big nope from me. Anyway,
that would
have
been very Greek of you.
It would have been. It would have been very Father of Theseus of me.
Yeah.
In fact, I look out on the ships. I'm looking for the three flags. I'm looking for Siobhan, Mutch, Akeisha. But you know what I see instead? I see fucking Heidi, Amel. And so I just fling myself into the water. That is a very funny and very complex joke.
No, I appreciate it.
That's one of those that you look at and you're like, well done.
You know what?
Well played. Look upon Phoebe's works, ye mighty in despair.
Yeah.
I sincerely hope that all of the pieces that they're playing within this show come together to be worth more than the sum of their parts.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that they will. But I'm really happy that they made this. Like, instead of spending the money that was spent to make the show on 17 more Netflix docudramas about murdered suburban white women, they spent this money on making this absolutely batshit piece of television. And I'm happy that that's the case. Like, that is the entertainment industry working as I wish it would. Like, make me more crazy shit. I'm good with that.
Get the crack back in the writers' rooms.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
If it works for American football, I think it should work for the writers on these shows.
Absolutely, yeah. I have a friend who's a showrunner for a quite popular TV series, and I'll suggest that to him. Like, next time you're running your writers' room, just crack. Just give them crack.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see how.
At the very least, Starburst.
I was gonna say, like, bowl of Starburst, bowl of crack. Let them choose.
Yeah. It's like a true grail situation, you know. You gotta
that's the crack of a carpenter.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, I don't know if you've ever had a carpenter doing work on your house, but you do tend to see a lot of crack.
I worked with a guy named Robbie who was a former rodeo rider. Like he rode bulls.
Right.
Okay. And
so one time I got half man.
So, yeah, the
head of a cow, this about guy.
Yeah, you don't want to know about the time he had to ride the Minotaur. Mm. He did tell me one day, he's like, yeah, I used to smoke crack for the pain. It was great. Like,
amazing.
Feels like you're replacing one problem with another there, Robbie. But that was my
iconic.
That was just my read of that situation.
Just coming off a bull at a rodeo and they're like, get that boy's crack. You gonna need that pop.
That's yeah, that is more or less the way he described
the rodeo clowns running on with your little pipe.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
You're being led through to the rodeo and you've got there a little bit late and they're like present you with the bull and it's the bull with the man's head and you're like, what the? I don't want a bull that I can speak to.
This is Craig. Yeah. Yeah, right.
I've got four stomachs. So on the plus side,
Craig from Yorkshire?
Yes.
Yeah. He sounds like he's from Yorkshire.
Well, no, I think more East Midlands. I think that's more of a Leicestershire accent.
Yeah, that's what my wife always says. Don't let me near the buffet.
I feel like Jeremy would also be a good Minotaur name.
Jeremy the Minotaur.
Jeremy the Minotaur. Hello.
Yeah.
You ever had your head replaced with the head of a man on top of a cow's body? Call in.
Oh my god! Yeah. Do you think have we said everything we have to say about this episode of Chaos?
I think. Hang on. Let me have a Let me have a look.
Phoebe's notes. Phoebe's notes. What do we got, Phoebe?
Let me have a look at Phoebe's notes.
While Phoebe's looking at her notes, I hated the bit where she was like, oh, you're a Styrnax. And then he goes, Nax.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. Yeah, that was annoying. Oh, yeah, that was not good.
Yeah.
I did, Milo, I paused at that point and then went back to hit the pendulum.
Oh, okay. Yeah, nice.
To unpause.
Yeah, Nax really sounds like it would be one of those like underwear startups that makes like, you know, boxer shorts that don't smell or whatever.
Yeah.
No, they make ones that really cup the grundle.
Yeah.
That's the
detained grundle underwear. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Nax is for.
The new line from Taint and Grundle.
Yeah. It's endorsed by Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
really corrupts your grundle, man.
Yeah, man.
I think we've got everything apart from like what the actual story of Glaucus is, which is like again. Like, because this is it's a subject of a play by Euripides, which is lost. We don't have it anymore. And yeah, he falls into the thing of honey, and then the Greek version of Asclepius, whose name I cannot remember, shows up, and he sees a snake bringing its dead snake spouse back to life with a herb. So he uses the herb to bring Glaucus back to life, and then he sort of lives in a sort of liminal space. Like, is he like kind of a hero? Is he like kind of demi? Is he kind of sort of demi? Sort of like what is like? Is he kind of like middle management? Like, or what? Like, is he a supervisor? Like, we don't know what Glaucus is supposed to be. But like, why that's in there? Hera is having an affair with Poseidon.
Because he's a toe freak.
Because he's a toe freak.
She loves that shit. Yeah,
she does indeed love that shit. And
she's here for it.
The perfect guy to do some shrimping.
Yeah. Oh, we have some. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Poseidon invented shrimping. Mm-hmm. And honestly led to an awful lot of misunderstandings on ocean going grinder. Poseidon there.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, Poseidon's actually kind of a sub, and Hera's hitting him with the three dildo strap.
The three dildo problem.
Yeah. 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 There you go.
And on that note.
And on that bombshell. Yeah. This is.
We started with crack, and we ended with the three dildo problem. That's a good episode
crack,
in my book.
From crack to crack of a different sort.
God damn it, I love you guys.
this has been a free one. Thank you very much
God,
for
it
listening.
Hasn't, has it?
Yeah, I'm afraid to say. And let me tell you one of our crack commandments, which is that you can get more of this on the Patreon. We do episodes every other week on the Patreon, much like this one. So if you want this but more of it, you can sign up there. It's $5 a month. There's a bunch of good shit on there, you know.
If you'd like to baste your brain in more of this,
yeah,
then that's the place to go.
Baste away. And on there, you know, you can wade into the comments. You can discuss with the other hogs what the crack commandments of ancient Greece should be. So thank you very much for listening. We'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.